Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 100-Year Real Estate Investor. We're your host, Jake and Gino, and this is the show dedicated to long-term personal financial engineering. Gino, how's it going?
Doing good, Jake. How you doing, brother?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest is the founder and CEO of Alliance Consolidated Group Companies. At 24 years old, he began building his empire with $0, but a lot of hustle. Today, he owns over $500 million in assets across the country and shares his insights and knowledge to help create long-term wealth for others. So without further ado, Ben Reinberg, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jake and Gino. I appreciate being here. Thank you for having me. And I know I'll be able to drop a lot of knowledge on your audience.
Hey, we're ready for it. It's always our pleasure, as they say at Chick-fil-A. So let's get this kicked off. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in business.
When I was younger, starting out, I graduated from Indiana University from the business school. And it was called the Indiana School of Business. Now it's called the Kelly School of Business. And it was an outstanding school. I was born and raised in Chicago area. And when I got out of college, I first started in accounting. And I was on an audit in New York. And it was my first time in New York. And I was on an audit with a billionaire in his office. And he encouraged me to really get out there and be an entrepreneur because he felt I was more of an entrepreneur and not much of a CPA. And so I'm a CPA by trade. And long story short, just bought my first deal in the Chicago area. It was industrial and did really well. And just it launched me. My first deal gave me the confidence to know, like, hey, I can raise a few million bucks. I was 23 at the time. Didn't really understand much about business and except for through school.
Hold on. Did you say you're 23 and you just happen to raise a few million bucks? Because I'm not giving my money to most 23-year-olds. Yeah. You might want to dive into that a little bit.
Well, it was real simple. It was, I know how to package a deal. I financially engineered it well. And back then, there was no internet. So I had to go out with shoe leather and hustle. I had to ask people, meet people, tap into people I knew. And people believed me. They liked the opportunity. I was paying a great return. It was in a high-profile suburb of the Chicago area. It was great real estate. Captains of industry were coming in next door in this huge development. It used to be a former naval base. It was a famous project going on, and we were right next door. So the real estate spoke for itself, and I just taught myself how to polish myself a little bit. I was like a piece of coal, and I had to become a diamond. And when I was younger, I just hustled, and I believed in myself, and I went to my godfather, Bruno, and I said, I need a loan. And he was the chairman of a local bank in my hometown. And I went in there with a three-piece suit and had my shoes shine like I knew how I had to do it. I was conservative. And I think it was an 80 LTV loan. And it was recourse. And I don't sign recourse anymore, but I had nothing to lose. I had no money, nothing in the bank. And so I took a shot. And I said, well, what would be the worst case, Jake, if I didn't raise the money? I'd be at the same place I started.
So, and you got an Uncle Bruno. You can't beat that, right?
That's right. And so I owe it to my mother for supporting me and giving me a lot of motivation that I could do it. You need that foundation behind you. She was always someone that said, you know, I believe in you and you can do it and don't give up. And that mindset really carried me even to today. And I owe her a lot of gratitude for having that inspiration and belief in me, because I didn't really believe in myself. I didn't love myself when I was younger. I didn't really understand mindset like I do today. And I'm into personal development heavily now. But so I raised the money, we closed. And the first week, Jake, if you want to talk about testing your manhood, I lost 45% of the income in the first week. I had a tenant move out. And so I had to deal with it. That's when life tests you and says, okay, who is the real Ben Reinberg?
So that's when you started leasing real estate too, I have a feeling.
No, you hire a talent. So I hired a talented broker I knew from the health club. Great guy. Huge into industrial. Big player. We created a two-tenant building, a three-tenant building, and I sold it for like a, I'll put in a multifamily multiple since you guys are multifamily. It was like a 3X multiple. Huge IRR. It was within 3 years. Extended a lease. I worked with a company out of San Diego that came on the scene. It was called War Room, which nowadays, folks, I don't know if you use Dropbox, Box, or Citrix, or these shared file systems. That used to be called the War Room when I was younger. And there was a gentleman out of California that launched this company called RCM. His name was Stephen Alter. And I'm grateful for you. I owe him a lot because that helped me sell my first deal. I was the broker on record. I sold it. I learned how to sell a deal. And I said, man, I could be a great broker. I've never been a broker, but I did for that one deal to just understand the business. And I realized one of the hugest lessons that I've learned from that deal was we had to replace the roof. And so when I underwrote in Argus, we put in a roof replacement. And that allowed me to achieve the price I was looking for. And so the lesson learned was let people know the train's coming. And when you can let people know the train's coming, guess what? You can get a lot of value out of that because you build rapport and trust. And then when you get through due diligence, mm-hmm. there's not retrading happening. And mm-hmm. so I've learned in my career how to stipulate to the issues and questions that your buyers are going to ask when you sell it. And I work with some of the best brokers in the country that I've taught and have grown and done billions of dollars of transactions with me and other people as well. And I'm extremely proud of those kids that are now young men in their late 30s and 40s that have done work for us that have just crushed it. And I see the habits and the skill set they've developed. And a lot of it we've talked about and I've taught them and they've taught me. And so that's what the business is about. It's all growth and learning and keeping your mind open and learning new things and having the ability to just have that wide lens and seeking
what
the truth.
What about the retrading though? You brought up the retrading. You know, I think that's something that Gino and I were guilty of early on in our career. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's not the kind of thing that provides longevity and good relationships. Is that something that you tend to avoid or what's your take on a retrade these days?
I think it's misinterpreted by the brokerage community in the world. It's all about communication and building rapport. So for example, I've had deals where the seller has not been honest about a piece of land we're buying with, you know, say like a huge shopping center or whatever, a medical office, which we do now. And if the seller's not going to be upfront or there's environmental issues or if there's things we didn't expect, I tell them upfront. I said, look, here's our price. But however, if there's things missing, it's going to impinge value. You have to have a discussion.
So we're going to stick it if you're upfront with us, basically, is what you're saying. We're going to stick this price, but, you know, everything that you're giving me has got to be the truth, essentially.
It's all integrity. If you act with integrity, I'll give you an example. So I had a broker here in California. She called me, and she was freaking out, and she said, I have $500,000 commission on the line, and I can't figure out how to get this over the hump. The buyer wants a credit. The seller wants to give X. How do I get this over the finish line? So I taught her. I told her how to package it. I told her it's got to stand on its own, your package, and explained to them the issues. Long story short, she followed it to a T, exactly what I told her to do, and the deal got closed and she made her commission. And I said, I go, you got to come from love, you got to come from integrity. You know, everyone feels like I got to hammer the shit out of someone to get what I want. It's not how the business works because it's a marathon business, it's commercial real estate. It will always be that way, and you have to respect it that way. And so things come back to you. The universe will bite you in the ass if you don't do things the right way. And what ends up happening is that if you have to retrade, the best way to do it is to document it, show quotes, put together a cover page outlining it, put together a professional presentation for your seller. So you know, like, hey, this is real stuff because someone else is going to identify this and you're going to have to deal with it if you don't sell it to me. So what's going to happen? It's going to go back up, say it's listed. It's going to go back on the market. You're going to have to deal with someone else. Who knows? Maybe interest rates change. Look at this environment. Cap rates can change as well and risk. And by the way, the pool of buyers can shrink in a matter of a month or less. And so at the end of the day, if you're up front, you come from integrity and you build rapport in the process, you have great success asking for credit. Where I see people, let me finish my thought, where I see people struggling with a retrade, I don't even like the word retrade.
No, it's a dirty word. It's a dirty word in the space.
It's not dirty. It just doesn't have a good connotation.
It's a little dirty.
What it means is it's more about like, here's the issues. And so whenever we go into a deal, we're always like, hey, you know, what's the roof, the HVAC, the parking lot? We talk about the improvements at the property. And if the seller doesn't know, well, or the broker for sure probably doesn't know. What ends up happening is like, okay, well, we started here. We asked you questions. You didn't know. We inspected it. We got some issues and we based our financial analysis off of X. And so as long as you have intelligent conversation, it's not retrading. It's just being intelligent because guess what? The brokers don't live with the property. You and Gino live with the property, Jake. And that's the disconnect. It's like, You know,
well, and sometimes they have commission breath, right? So they're just, there's like your lady there, they want to get over the line. So that's,
it's a brothel. The brokers are in the brothel business, and we're in the consumption, you know, holding. Look,
it's a child though, right? It's essentially a child. You're going to get that child. You got to raise that child to become an adult. And if it starts off with defects, you know, you're going to have a problem getting to that point. And even during the pandemic and last year, we under contract for a deal. Something was not disclosed. Huge internal water leak issue that caused a ton of rot, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. We just walked away. We said, hey, we found this. We don't want to haggle with you on it. So essentially we're out. And so that was a recent scenario for us. And I don't know. I don't think the retrade was there in that environment. So we said, hey, see ya. We're out of this.
Well, and it's a good example. I mean, sometimes the best deals you do are the deals you don't do. And we've had that before. It's rare that we put something on our contract we don't close. However, you'll go through scenarios where you'll be involved in a deal and the seller, you know, doesn't represent, you know, that there's a gas station down the street and it leaked and it was been rolling since the properties and you have to do a phase two and they don't realize it or whatever. Things come up in deals. And so at the end of the day, there's no mar on your track record if you have to retrade or ask for a credit, because at the end of the day, you live with the property and you're responsible if you put financing on it. You have investors like us in deals, you're a fiduciary. And so again, I don't really worry about what people think. I do what's best for our company and our investors. And I know if we act with integrity, everything else, that's why I've been in the business so long. That's why you carry through, because when you act with integrity, people want to deal with you because we close deals. People know we know how to close deals. People love selling us properties because we lead the process. But regarding, it's just a retrade and that mind, that's just fear. And if you have to have a discussion with the seller, have an intelligent discussion, document it. And at the end of the day, you'll have great success. We've had people come to us and ask for credit. And I look at it, I'm like, you know what? That lady's right. She's right. We have a couple HVAC units that need to be replaced that we're going to have to replace in the next few months. So the question is, are we doing it or is she going to do it or her company? And so at the end of the day, you pick and choose, you look at your economics and you know, greed is an interesting thing in this country. And if you can get away from greed and focus on other things, I think money just attracts to you. And so that's a good advice for your audience is don't focus on greed. You know, we are a consuming environment in the United States. It's more, 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 more. Instead of really being grateful for what we have and understanding, like, if I do the right thing, guess what? I might get three deals brought to me in the next few months. And so
you've been in the business for over four decades. What have you seen the big changes over these last four decades in the real estate industry?
The biggest change is technology. I mean, when I first got in the business, it was all, you know, how we used to get deals, Jake, is they would send us a package. I would call it a shiny book. So say like CBRE would send me a book to the office and with an Argus run or Excel run, whatever they would use. And we would look at it and they'd say, okay, the bid date's in 3 weeks. So we drive to Indianapolis from Chicago and go look at a deal or whatever. It was a regional business at the time, or we'd drive to Nashville or wherever. And we go look at properties and we'd spend a week there. And then going forward, technology became more prevalent. And then PDFs and Adobe and all this different software. And what ended up happening is it opened the breadth of buyers coming in. The 1031 market took off significantly when the internet was prevalent. So technology to me has been an interesting change in my career. However, where I benefit is because when I was younger and there was no internet, you had to use the phone. So I'm really good. I give good phone and I'm really good at the phone and video calls because I was thrown in the deep water and said, you got to learn how to communicate. You got to learn how to influence people, not manipulate people, influence people. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. And what I end up learning is taking those skills and saying, okay, now I can use my skills and use it towards technology. So we do a lot of video calls. We do a lot of phone and I have personal meetings still too. I go and fly and meet people. I meet my lenders when they want to see me or see some of our leadership team. So the personal touch is still prevalent, but I would say the biggest change has been technology, but also being able to communicate with our investors faster. We've been able to raise money really fast in this environment with technology. So I see the game has changed. I also like it in certain ways with the technology because I have more financing opportunities. And because you can communicate faster, I could distribute information quicker. My staff can, within minutes, get someone a package for a loan or for equity or a letter of intent. It's so much different. I used to have to use a fax machine to send my letter of intents in or mail. I might have to mail. I used to use FedEx a lot.
Did they get it? Did they get it? I wonder if they got it, right?
Well, yeah, we would always say, did they get it? But also the other thing too is I remember our phone expenses. So we used to have intra and inter phone bills. And yes. So when you're on inter phone bills, so say I was calling from Chicago to, St. Louis, Missouri, I was like, okay, we got to wrap this thing up because we knew how expensive the call was.
It's meters like running, boys.
Yeah. I bought my first car when I graduated college.
I got 10 minutes left and 12 text messages. We got to get out of here, right?
And I used to have a phone that would be on the hump of, it was an Acura Integra. It was in red. It was a great car. And I used to have a phone. It was Cellular One. They were like a big cell phone company at the time and had the cord.
Dude, I worked for them out of college. No shit. That was my first job out of college.
My first phone. So like, you have the phone or you put it on speaker and it was like, I don't know, it was like 35 cents a minute, which was like a ton of money. And so that's how it was. Things have changed. Now we all have cell phones. We're distracted by thousands of emails. I have a newsletter I started 18 years ago. It's now called a blog. I have 100,000 people that read it on a weekly basis. And so just I'm able to communicate with more people and have a larger reach since I started in the business. That's been the biggest change is technology has taken a foothold. There's a lot of different companies now that we use and different software. I was there when CoStar started. I was there when Jeff Weiner launched LinkedIn. So I've seen all these platforms grow. And it's really neat to see. And it inspires me because it shows you that there's always things you could do to get better. And there's always things you could do to improve society. And so I've seen a lot of that in my career.
That's good. Let's talk about that's the good of technology. Let's talk real quickly about the bad of technology. Before we started recording, you're like, hey, everyone's staying at home. It's hard to build culture. It's hard to get that osmosis, that mastermind going with, that's some of the challenges. Let's talk about some of the challenges that you're facing to try to build this long-termism, enduring organization.
The difference is that when people are working remotely, they're so tempted with their personal life. You can't control their hours or what they're doing, or even if they're working for you. So it becomes trust. It becomes KPIs and metrics and measuring people. And you have to hire good people and you have to be trusting. You also have to have really thick skin to get rid of people if you're not happy or they're not performing. And so if someone's not performing, we get rid of someone quickly. And people have become more of widgets. There's not that emotional connection anymore. There's not someone walking. We still have people in the same office. I have people here in my office and I love that. But there's, if someone's in Minneapolis or in Tampa, Florida that works for us, I'll see them maybe once a quarter, maybe not. I travel a lot, but you lose that connection. Us as humans need to be connected. And with this environment, we're working remotely. It doesn't serve anyone. You're sitting in office. I'm in an office right now. People are working from home. And you're tempted. You're tempted to hang out with your spouse. You're tempted to maybe have a ton of distractions between family and other distractions that go on. Social media, especially with the younger generation, we're incorporating policies about social media and how to deal with it. Because people, and I'm just as guilty. I'm on social media now and my brand is growing. So I'm looking at my Instagram. I'm like a kid now. However, I realized that all those distractions cost you time and time costs you money and fulfillment and all the things you want out of life. We only have our time, guys, at the end of the day. So working remote to me has been a challenge because I grew up in life of being in an office, showing up at the crack of dawn, being the first one in, the first one out. And now the game has changed. It's like I feel accountability is not as prevalent when people are working from home. There's a big accountability factor because it's like, I'm going to go throw a load of laundry in, or, you know, I'm going to go for a walk and take an hour. And so it's
Honey, you're home. Just take the kid today, right? You can do it. You're working from
home. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There's too many distractions or there's too many opportunities for distraction. So you have to be more disciplined. And it was a challenge. I'll give you guys an example. When we were, so we're an essential business when we were in Illinois and we came back to the office, you know, I think the pandemic started like February, March. We were back in the office by like June 1st in Chicago, in the area. And, but what I saw was when I was working from home for like 2.5 months, I hated it. I couldn't stand it because, you know, we're in the middle of equity raising. We're doing deals. We did a lot of deals during the pandemic. And it was like, just managing people of like sending Dunkin' Donuts to someone to just make sure they're alive, or, you know, it was such a different game. And I didn't like it because I didn't have that culture around me where I was used to. So it was a challenge for me. I'm not a fan of the remote. I know the younger generation like it because you don't have to be as accountable and you could do what you want. And then you got this work-life balance stuff that people talk about. There is no work-life balance. I'll make that real clear. If you love what you do, I'm not saying passion, I'm saying love. If you really love what you do, you balance your life with that. And there's no faint of heart in what we do. And if you want to be wildly successful and you want to be successful in real estate, you got to work, you got to grind, you got to show up, you got to be persistent. And you have to have those qualities and that mindset. Because I see more kids and people fade in and out of the business and recessions and stuff because they don't have the heart to make it. I interview candidates where they had businesses and you look at it and you say, well, why are you looking for a job? They don't want to hang in and suffer, or they don't want to grind. And
they lack the toughness a lot of times. There's a lot of meek people these days. Yeah.
And I see that with my kids' generation, because, you know, they come from this entitlement, you know, they come from this trophy generation. All these kids had trophies growing up. I used to watch, my kids were huge baseball players and one of them was a big football player. And what I saw was every single event was rewarding for not the greatest performance. And so I said, well, this isn't good. We're rewarding people for not performing and it doesn't strive to get better. And so I worry about my kids. I worry about this next generation because, you know, we lose a lot of the principles of what creates, you know, the ability to have longevity in a career and success. And that gets thrown out of the window. And technology doesn't help. Technology, everyone gets lazy. Oh, don't worry. I'll just send them an email. Well, wait a minute. Can you pick up a phone?
You don't need to do that. You can have ChatGPT send the email now. I don't know if you've ever seen this thing. They showed it to me this weekend at a conference. Scared the shit out of me. I was asking it about the Terminator and things, and it was totally giving me side-skirted answers, so F that thing.
Well, you know, it's interesting because ChatGPT is – AI is going to definitely be the wave of the future, I think, in commercial real estate as this industry changes, and that will be a big change you'll see over the next few years. But what's interesting is that I'll ask your audience, and this might scare them, is if someone sends you an email and pick up the phone and call them back, don't even respond. And I know
these kids can't call people back. The best you're going to get is a text. Ben, you're asking for something that's not possible. You're going to send them into a panic and they're going to curl up like a little baby in the corner and start shaking. I can't do that, Ben. I can't pick up the phone.
If you want to, Jake, if you want to change the game and you're out there listening and you're in real estate, whether it's residential or commercial, and someone sends you an email, pick up the phone and call them and see what happens. I guarantee you that relationship will get deeper connected because you'll be able to communicate how you feel, what the challenge is. That's the problem in our business, is that people rely on email and the tone of the email, or maybe
always an issue, right?
It's too much ambiguity.
Oh, I'm offended by this. This guy sent it to me. Oh, he's a prick. He's going too short. I'm the worst with it too. I don't use caps. I barely use periods. I just get it out as quickly as he can, and it better be like 10 words or less.
Anything that's more than two sentences is too much.
Don't send me something more than two sentences. I'm gonna give you the middle finger emoji back, right?
Well, think about that, Jake. Like, people look at it, and it's like you could be the kindest, loving person in the world, and you're just busy, and you're not thinking about like, how am I going to come off to this person, right? Because you're busy, you're hurt. And so now it's on, you got to really methodically think about like, how am I communicating here? What words am I using? Like, who am I dealing with? How do they learn? And so I like the phone call because the phone call to me is I could build rapport. It's like what we're doing right now. We're building rapport. We're connecting. We're actually looking at each other. How amazing is this? Okay. Mm-hmm. We can actually communicate about a deal or a lease or financing. And I can help you and you can help me. Everyone you meet contributes in your life in some way, whether it's a negative or positive, you're getting something out of it that you can learn from and grow from. And so on the phone or these video calls to me are the best. And people always say, well, why do you want to do a video call? I want to connect.
And you better turn the video on. If you don't have the video on, I can't trust you. Okay. What's going on back there? Don't give me the wall.
That's a policy in our company. We said, look, and people get pissed at me because I'm driving. I'll keep the camera on, but sometimes I can't hear if I'm driving through the mountain.
They just want to see that big ass sunglass you got up top, right? That big window you got up top, right? It looks nice.
Yeah.
That sunroof, man, looking sweet when he's driving in that Acura, Gino.
I don't have an Acura anymore. I've upgraded, but anyway, yeah, I'd still love to have that Acura if I could. It was stick shift. I love that car.
But what's that? That's the anti-theft device these days.
They say. Yeah, nowadays you got the paddles. You only got stick shift. You got to suck the fucking paddles. Yeah, on
it's like you're playing Mario Kart. Wee.
So one of my cars is a Mercedes, and it's got the paddle, and I never use it. But I have a Tesla, which I love. I love Elon's cars. He's really amazing what he's been able to do with technology. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's why I think I know it separates me in the business because I'm willing to get on a Zoom and show my face and also get on the phone. And when we're in the middle of a deal, I'm really adamant to my leadership team and to pass that down is get on the phone. Don't rely on an email because guess what? Things come up in due diligence. How do we do this? Or we need to order this, or the lender wants this, or you know, property management division wants this out of it. How do we do it? You can shorten the learning curve. You can shorten the wick to get something done if you pick up the phone. And it's so important. It's such an easy concept, but people are so fearful to be like, well, wait a minute. I might get exposed of, I don't know something. Okay. And that's okay. It's okay if you're younger and you don't know something because when I was 23 and I was raising equity and doing my first deals and my first hand, I didn't know shit. I had to learn. I had to ask people. I had to be vulnerable. Like, how do I do this? And how do I finance
this? It's real easy, guys. Hey, I don't know right now, but let me find out. All right? I'm going to get you the answer. You don't got to get too cute with it. Mm-hmm. So last question for you. Current state of the economy, what are you seeing and where are we headed?
I see the economy is going to struggle this year. I feel that with interest rates rising, I feel there's going to be unemployment's going to grow in certain sectors of the country. There's some states that do really well and are getting population growth and new concepts like where Gino lives in Florida and Texas and certain other parts of the country and Tennessee. But I feel overall as a country, we're going to struggle. We're in uncharted territories. We're seeing interest rates rise fast that we haven't seen in years. And I feel that the buying power is going to decrease for people. We see inflation. So you go to the grocery store, groceries are so expensive right now. And I think restaurants are going to suffer too, even though people are, the restaurants are busy and this and that. Yeah, in certain areas. And I live in a wealthy area of California, so it seems like nothing's wrong. But that's not America. That's not reality. I grew up in the Midwest. And
you're right. America's Tennessee, friend, and you're misplaced, Ben. All right, I'm telling you.
That's right.
Get you some Tennessee in you, man. That's where I'm located right now. I'm a little biased. But
I love Tennessee. I'm a huge fan of Tennessee and Nashville. And so at the end of the day, I feel we're going to struggle as a country for a little bit with our buying power. I feel inflation's going to keep going. CPI indexes are rising, which is good if you're a landlord. However, and I think financing is going to be a challenge. You know, there's a lack of liquidity for businesses. So I don't know if you're going to see a lot of business growth. I can't see it with rising interest rates and people taking risks. And I feel bad because I think a lot of people are going to be laid off and looking for jobs. And the government's going to have to step
General in. Motors just sent a shit ton of buyouts. I don't know if you guys saw that for like the majority of its full-time U.S. workers.
It doesn't surprise me. So for us, you know, it's concerning to me. I don't like the state our country's in right now. I feel we don't have I think there's just so much uncertainty out there, Jake, that people don't know what's going to happen. And the stock market's volatile. Interest rates are changing. How do businesses get financing they could afford? And I think we're in for some real challenges coming up. And I'm hopeful that in 2025, we right in the ship and things bounce back and we implement. Well, this country needs to be energy independent. And if we haven't learned that lesson, then we're blind, because mm-hmm. it prevents a lot of issues from happening to be mm-hmm. energy independent. It creates a good economic. And so the economy to me is going to be a challenge in this country. And I feel that it's just things have to change. And whether, you know, increasing interest rates and high taxes doesn't serve the U.S. citizen to deploy money. What I always felt was important is you need to put money back in the citizens' hands, the population of the United States. Let them drive the economy. Let them spend money. Give them incentivized to spend money, and then everyone wins. So mm-hmm. the more money we can create for the United States citizens is a tremendous importance if you want to drive this economy to be where it needs to be. And with taxes and interest rates where they are, and, you know, it's great for multifamily. More people for you guys are going to be renting apartments, which is a beautiful thing. But home ownership is going to be tough because interest rates are high. You're going to have to put more money down. They're probably going to institute low LTVs to mitigate risk. They learned from last recession what they did wrong, these mortgage companies and banks. And so I feel at the end of the day, we're in for some challenges ahead of us. And so it's a good time to have a lot of powder and keep it dry and look for opportunities. But what I love about this market, gentlemen, is in chaos, there's opportunities. And that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm licking my chops and saying, all right, Ben, it's going to be long hours, weekends, but that's okay. These are the moments where you build wealth. And I've seen
the wealth building time. Completely agree.
Yeah. I've seen these cycles before and I'm excited. And I'm in the prime of my career, so it's only even going to get better. And so I'm really excited for the folks at Alliance and my company and our investors and future investors, and letting people know that tough times don't last, tough people do. And you got to go out there and grind and do it. And when you can do that and you could show up every day, it's a beautiful thing. And good things will happen. I call it the real estate gods. The real estate gods will reward you for hard work, persistence, and doing the right thing. And if you do that on a consistent basis and you create consistency, you'll have tremendous success in real estate, especially commercial real estate.
It's easy. What I'm hearing, he said, follow the three big ones: Texas, Tennessee, Florida. Live there, work there, play there, and everything works out. Okay, forget the rest. That's my two cents on it. Ben, this has been great, man. I really appreciate
it. There's a lot of great states out there you can invest in.
That's debatable.
those are just three of many, you know.
Hey, real quick, I picked it, you know, I don't know, 12 years ago when I made my move, and I stand to it to this day. So the metrics said the same thing back then. But best way for folks to get a hold of you, give us your handles, your social, your websites, all that good stuff.
Sure. Best way to get a hold of me is go to benreinberg.com. That's my personal brand. You can go to Ben Reinberg. I own it. My podcast is about health, wealth, fitness, and it's from success to significance. We have celebrities to ultra high net worth individuals on my show. And, you know, go to Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can learn more about me. To learn more about my company, go to AllianceCGC.com. That's AllianceCGC.com. You can log on and learn about our new Alliance Medical Property Fund. It's really exciting. It's the best fund in the United States right now in the market. And so we're really excited about it. And that's the best way to connect with me. So feel free to log on and follow me. Go to BenReinberg.com. You want to learn about me personally. And that's what we do, and that's who we are.
Full disclaimer, folks, before the show, I tried to get him off the ticket talk. I said it's controlled by the deepest of deep states, but he's not bending on that one. He's still rocking it. So
I have a whole staff that handles it.
Totally busting chops, gang. 100%. This has been great. Guys, thank you so much. And as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy. And special thanks to our guest, Ben, today. And we will see you next time. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you both. I appreciate it. Good seeing you.